Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're plunging into a really fascinating story, an American retail icon, Gap.
Yeah, it's a big one. I mean, not just any clothing store, right? We're talking over 3,000 stores globally.
Exactly. And just to give you a sense of the scale here, back in 2021, they pulled in, what, $16.7 billion in net sales?
Mm-hmm. Which was a huge 21% increase from 2020. So quite the performance.
Definitely sets the stage.
It does. So our mission today really is to kind of unpack the core marketing strategies that let Gap get so big, reach so many people, and crucially, how they've managed to adapt, you know, through all the changes over the years.
Right. We want to pull out the key insights, the sort of nuggets of knowledge from the detailed report we've got.
Exactly.
And the idea is by looking at Gap's whole journey, you listening can hopefully see what made them a global fashion player.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even get some ideas, you know, for your own thinking about market strategy or even your business.
Like a shortcut, yeah.
Yeah.
To get up to speed on a really interesting case study.
Totally. And this deep dive, it's based on a pretty comprehensive report that covers Gap's history, their strategies, how they've used tech.
There's a lot there. So should we jump in?
Let's do it. So where did it all start? How did this giant begin?
Well, it's actually a pretty grounded story. 1969, right? Donald Fisher, a real estate agent. He's 40. And he just couldn't find Levi's that fit him properly.
Huh? A common problem even now, maybe.
Right. But he saw a gap in the market, literally. He and his wife opened a store just to sell Levi's, all sizes.
And they called it The Gap. I always wonder about the name.
Yeah, inspired by that Generation Gap idea, what retailers were offering versus what younger people actually wanted.
Makes sense.
And it took off. I mean, really took off. By 73, just 4 years in, they had 25 stores across the U.S.
Wow, that's fast scaling.
Incredibly fast. By 1999, the San Francisco Chronicle named Gap Inc. Company of the Year out of like 500 top companies in Northern California. Shows you the kind of trajectory they were on.
But what's really interesting to me is that pivot they made early on, 1974, right? They started making clothes under their own name.
Yes, that was huge.
Yeah.
Not just selling Levi's anymore. And it worked.
Clearly. They went public just 2 years later, in 76. That shows some serious confidence and agility.
Absolutely. And that shift, it fueled more expansion.
Mm.
In 77, they tried out logo and brands, early steps towards that multi-brand thing they do so well now.
Targeting different customers even back then.
Exactly. And then in 83, they bought Banana Republic, which was like a safari themed store originally.
Yeah, travel and safari clothing company, I think.
Right. They totally revamped it, made it more upscale, fashionable, just Banana Republic. And around 84, the Pocket Tee came out. Classic Gap.
Oh, yeah. The pocket tee, definitely iconic.
And they started going global pretty quick, too. London in 87, Vancouver in 89.
And then Old Navy in 94, which started as something else, didn't it? Gap Warehouse.
Yeah, a prototype that just exploded. Old Navy was famously the first retailer to hit $1 billion in sales in under 4 years.
Insane. So that diversification, that multi-brand strategy, it was clearly working.
It became their cornerstone,
yeah.
Each brand having its own distinct feel. Gap is, you know, classic, casual, young. Banana Republic is more sophisticated, upscale.
And Old Navy?
Old Navy's all about affordable, trendy stuff for the whole family. Different price point, different vibe entirely.
It's really smart segmentation, isn't it? They create these separate identities so they don't muddy the waters for any one brand.
Exactly. It lets them cover almost the whole market under one roof, but appeal to different groups specifically. And it makes them more agile, too. If one segment shifts, it doesn't sink the whole ship.
Right. So Gap started aiming young, like 17-25.
Mm.
But now, across all the brands, they cover pretty much everyone. Kids, older folks. Old Navy is huge for families. People watching their budget, but still wanting style.
And then you've got Athleta, which came later. That's for fitness, outdoorsy women. Workout gear, but also stylish casual wear that functions well.
And Banana Republic for that higher-end fashion customer who's willing to pay more for it. Modern, kind of modish designs.
The product range under this umbrella is just vast.
Yeah, beyond the basics like jeans and tees at Gap, they have shoes, perfumes, Old Navy has maternity wear, tons of affordable options.
Banana Republic goes even further. Sunglasses, jewelry, handbags, fragrances, even like bedding and art. Plus, petites and tall sizes.
Catering to everyone.
And Athleta with all the workout stuff. Yoga pants, bras, swimwear, nightwear. Don't forget Baby Gap either.
Yeah.
Everything for babies, clothes, toys, nursery stuff.
And those gift cards that work across all the brands, that's a clever promotional tool. Encourages trying out the other stores.
Definitely. Now, pricing is obviously key in apparel.
Super price-sensitive market.
Right. So they tailor it. Old Navy is competitive, good quality for the price. Gap is a step up, priced higher but still seen as affordable for what you get.
And Banana Republic and Athleta are positioned as premium, higher prices.
Yeah, the luxury end of their portfolio. But what's interesting is how they use data here. Back in 2016, they brought in price optimization tech, using cloud solutions to adjust prices based on demand, customer reactions, basically in real time.
That's very dynamic, staying competitive using data.
Mm-hmm. Very data-driven.
Okay, so distribution. How do they get all this stuff to people?
Well, you've got the physical stores, obviously. Over 3,000 of them, company-run and franchises all over the world, plus their websites, and they even sell on places like Amazon now.
So it's about being where the customer is, making it super convenient.
Convenience is huge for them. It's core to their whole omni-channel strategy. You know, order online, pick up in store, easy returns to a physical store, even if you bought it online.
And they're really pushing digital hard. Weren't they aiming for like 80% of revenue from e-commerce by the end of 2023?
That was the goal, which meant, you know, strategically closing some physical stores, but also opening more distribution centers to handle all the online orders.
Makes sense. And beyond the gift cards, what about promotion? You mentioned CSR earlier.
Right, corporate social responsibility. That PACE program is a great example. They've trained, what, over 700,000 women in countries where they manufacture, empowering them.
That definitely builds a positive brand image, resonates with consumers who care about that stuff.
It does. And it all ties back into the customer experience, this seamless omni-channel thing. Consistent feel, whether you're in a store or online.
Their mobile app helps with that too, right? Exclusive offers, mobile payments for Gap card holders, managing rewards right there on your phone.
Yeah, making it easy. And behind the scenes, they're gathering tons of data about customer behavior.
To personalize everything.
Exactly. They sync up data across all the channels. So the app, the website, they give you recommendations based on what you've looked at, what you've bought. They even retarget you if you visited the site but didn't buy anything.
That personalization seems absolutely central to their whole marketing approach.
It really is. They use their own system, a customer data platform, or CDP, to pull together all sorts of data, first party, third party, to really understand their audience, segment them, and then run campaigns.
And they tailor the content, too. Dynamic content optimization.
Yeah, so what you see is ideally more relevant to you specifically. Makes every interaction feel more, you know, unique.
The numbers are pretty staggering. The report said something like 74% of website visits are personalized. And 80% of emails and product presentations.
That's personalization working at a massive scale. And look at their loyalty program relaunched in late 2020, and they signed up over 19 million new people in less than a year.
Wow, bringing the total to like 37 million members and cardholders, that's huge engagement.
And the tech isn't just online, they're using it in stores too. Since 2017, associates have had mobile devices to help customers.
So you don't have to queue up to open a credit card or pay or order something for home delivery.
Right. Speeding things up, making it smoother.
I think I saw something about checking prices in store, too, on devices mounted on the wall.
Yeah, Android devices with scanners. Some even in the dressing rooms. You can scan a tag, check for a different size or color right there.
That's properly integrated, trying to remove those little friction points.
So given all this focus on digital and seamless experience, how well does their actual website stack up? The report did flag a few issues.
Yeah, some things could be better, like call to action links sometimes don't have great color contrast, so they're easy to miss. Same with some offers in the header.
And no sticky header, which is annoying when you scroll down and lose sight of your shopping cart icon. Little things, but they add up.
On the category pages, though, they do a lot right. Sorting options, clear navigation on the side, filters to narrow things down.
Reduces that choice overload. And the quick add to cart feature is pretty standard good practice.
But some product images apparently load slowly on those pages. That can definitely hurt the experience.
Yeah, speed matters online. Then on the actual product page, lots of good stuff. Multiple photos, ratings, and reviews right there, social proof.
Recommendations for other items too, trying to bump up the sale.
Mm-hmm. And they highlight the free pickup and free fast shipping for loyalty members. Good incentive to sign up or maybe spend a bit more. Plus, really detailed descriptions, fit, sizing, care instructions. That builds confidence.
Still, a couple of snags, like a delay when swiping through product images. That sounds irritating.
It can be. And no add to favorites or wish list option, apparently. That's pretty common elsewhere, letting people save things for later.
Yeah, seems like a miss.
And then the checkout. Some good, some less good. They create urgency, telling you items won't stay in your bag forever if they're popular.
And free shipping over $50 if you sign in Clever Nudge to create an account and maybe spend more.
But a big one, no social login or guest checkout, making people type everything in manually. That's friction.
Definitely. That can kill conversions right at the finish line. Seems like a small thing, but it's often fatal.
For sure. Now, this whole journey, it wasn't all smooth sailing. They faced some big challenges.
Like logistics with all that rapid expansion.
Exactly. Managing inventory across a global network is complex. They had to invest heavily in pretty advanced systems, using AI to predict demand and optimize stock levels. That's crucial when you grow that fast.
And then COVID must have really thrown a wrench in the works, but also accelerated things online.
Absolutely. It forced a massive push towards digital. Huge investments in their tech infrastructure, websites, secure payments, handling all those online orders.
There were financial pressures too, right? Cost of stores, intense competition.
Yeah. They tackled that by focusing really hard on cost control, operational efficiency, that dynamic inventory management we mentioned, and just tighter financial planning backed by data.
And finding and keeping good staff for thousands of stores.
Yeah.
That's a huge HR challenge.
It is. They use tech for recruitment, online job boards, but also invested a lot in training, development, onboarding. They even have a dedicated department for diversity and inclusion, thinking long term about their people.
It shows a real commitment.
So when we talk about the tech they use now, it's not just what tools, but how they knit them together that's cutting edge, like Optimizely.
For A/B testing.
Yeah, but more than that. It's about constantly tweaking, micro-optimizing every digital touch point based on real-time customer behavior, reacting super fast.
Keeping things relevant and operationally.
They use something called New Relic. It tracks not just if the applications are working, but also the actual user experience.
So they can spot problems, friction points, before they become big issues.
Exactly. Ensuring that seamless experience is actually delivered, even at their scale. And they've got that find a store tool using ZIP codes, tying online back to the physical stores, omnichannel convenience again.
It's really fascinating how they've tried to replicate that successful strategy across both offline and online. Always analyzing, tweaking, learning what works.
Yeah, especially looking closely at their e-commerce experience. Their success isn't accidental, is it? It's consistent, focused strategy, executed really well.
Personalization and that smooth shopping experience online and off seem to be the absolute core.
Definitely. And even though their net sales dipped a bit in 2022, down to $15.6 billion from that high in 2021.
Shows that even giants face bumps, market changes.
Right. It just underlines the need for constant adaptation.
So if we pull back and look at the big picture, Gap's journey, from one store selling Levi's, making khakis cool in the 90s, becoming this multi-billion dollar global company, and now even opening up their supply chain to smaller businesses, like that collaboration with the Brooklyn Circus. What does it all tell us?
It seems to be about balancing, doesn't it? Leveraging that heritage, that iconic status, while also aggressively chasing innovation and adapting to a market that just never stands still.
So the provocative thought for you listening might be, how can you apply that same mindset, that constant analysis, that drive to adapt, even when facing big challenges like logistics, tech, money, people? How can you apply that to what you're working on or exploring?
Yeah, how do you balance respecting where you came from with needing to constantly evolve?
Well, we really hope digging into Gap's story has given you some valuable insights. Hopefully it empowers you to think about strategic growth and putting the customer first in whatever you're doing.